love how physical you are.
I love Fridays, especially when it's a long weekend.
You were doing a pose similar to that of a young Mary Lou Retton after winning a gold medal. You had your arms up in the air. You looked for an American flag. There should be an American flag nearby. I don't see one.
I don't either.
No. Uh-oh.
Well, it's just great news.
That is good news. It's Friday.
You know what today is?
Other than Friday?
Yes.
I do not.
Chicago beaches have opened today. All city beaches are free to enjoy. They'll be open from 6 a.m. through 11 p.m. all summer until September 2nd. Some people may be tempted to swim, but it's only allowed when lifeguards are on duty from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. You mean, like, if you wanted to just take, like, a GoPro and go jump in right now, you couldn't do it?
I'm not sure how that is. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Also, swimming pools around the area have opened, and I just want to let you know that if you smell chlorine in a pool,
yes,
it's not always a good thing, and a lot of times you smell the chlorine.
Yes.
If you smell it...
You dealt it. I know that for a fact, Wendy.
Kind of.
From third grade.
The odor that you smell in a public pool is not the chlorine, but it's the chlorine reacting to all the number ones in the pool.
Oh, no. Is that right?
Yep. So if you smell it... if you smell chlorine and you notice there are some pools where the smell of chlorine is stronger than others.
Yes, I have noticed that.
That means that
more people have relieved themselves in the pool.
Yes.
Almost. What's wrong? I say this politely. What's wrong with people? Why would you
just
do
wait.
That? Why would you
almost
do that?
Almost 40% of adults have admitted to urinating in the pool, but most of the bacteria from the urine is killed in seconds due to that chlorine.
Still not a good enough answer. And I like that 40% have admitted to doing it. So what's the true number? If 40% of the people just nod and go, yeah, I've done that, what percent are going, I'm not gonna answer that honestly? Why?
I don't know. And I don't want to ruin people's...
summer?
Yeah. But I just realized this, those little swimmers that you put on kids, it doesn't contain it like a diaper.
Remind me, I don't know if I'm sure what a little swimmer is. What is that?
They're little pants that you put on a baby.
It's like a swim diaper?
Yeah, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't hold it. So if they go number one, it leaks out. If they go number two, it kind of contains it there. But so no babies and no other people in your pool.
That's fair.
Kick everyone out.
That's so fair. Anytime I'm at a hotel, there's always a sign about things you are allowed and not allowed to do in a pool. And every once in a while, they'll list that you're not allowed to relieve yourself in the pool. And I go, does that even have to be mentioned? Isn't that just assumed?
The people who are going to do it.
It's regional.
Is it regional?
The people who are going to do it are not going to pay attention to that sign. So it doesn't really matter.
And you can't swim up to somebody and go, what does number seven say? Read it out loud to me so I know you know what it says.
Well, wait, those should be number one and number two.
I was going to say, if you're going number seven.
then you've got a different set of problems.
How do you even do that?
Oh, you know.
I know number three, but number seven?
Number seven,
that's a talent.
All right. Remember what a thrill it used to be to see a pool at a hotel?
Yes.
Now you look at them like, forget about it.
Yes.
I still go in them. I don't care. Whatever. You swim in a lake, don't you?
No, I don't mean about the dirtiness or whatever. I'm just like... I'm not going to go jump in a pool at 56 years old.
Oh, my God. I am. Why wouldn't you? Don't you swim in a pool?
I do, but I understand the reservation of it.
Why?
Well, wait a minute.
Stuff goes on. Stuff happens.
No, I have no reservations. But if I'm traveling to see my kids at school or something, I'm not going to jump in the pool at night. I just don't. That's not what I do.
What's the best time to do it?
Really? Like, you'd go visit a college kid and jump in the pool when you're done?
If it has a hot tub, maybe.
Well, I'm just, I usually only stay at hotels when we're on vacation.
Yeah.
So do you swim on vacation?
Well, yeah.
You sure?
Yeah. It's a swimming vacation.
My grandfather,
I mean, I'm not going to go to Switzerland in a couple weeks and look for the hotel pool.
Oh, I would.
My husband does too, Wendy. You should hang with him.
All right.
He every time we go to a hotel, he's like, first thing he does, he goes to check out the pool.
Sure.
I'm like, really? Why? I don't even pack my bathing suit.
You don't?
No. What is wrong with you
people? I sit on the side and read a book or something. But I don't know. I'm not a big swimmer.
I don't have a pool myself, so whenever I can have access to one.
Use it up.
Sure.
Yeah, take advantage. All right. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news, and then there's a big show ahead. It's true, Steve. Everything I just said is true. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. And speaking of proven winners,
the corridors asleep, past the shadows,
we are talking to the proven winners marketing specialist, Natalie Carmoli. Natalie, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very happy that it's warmed up here in Chicago. Last weekend, I planted some of my Proven Winners shrubs, and we want to tell all the listeners about a contest we have, a giveaway, a garden giveaway, the best of the best that's going on, and you can enter at WGNradio.com/contests. Can you tell us about some of the shrubs of the year that are part of this package?
I certainly can. The Shrubs of the Year is a really fun program that we've put together. It's fun and useful because we have our growers actually choose which shrubs the garden centers are asking for so that they can grow enough of the plant and they can make them available to consumers in garden centers. And for this year, we have four shrubs available in four different categories. So we start out with the hydrangea of the year, and that is Firelight Panicle Hydrangea, also called a hydrangea paniculata.
Panicula.
Yep, that is it.
Natalie, thank you for not hanging up on us.
You can sing that all the way to your garden while you're putting that in the ground.
All right.
Now, what color does that? I have Annabelle hydrangeas in my front yard. They're white. They're big. They're like clincher softballs. These are like a pinkish rose. What color?
Yeah, this is a little different than that Annabelle that you have in your front yard. The Annabelle is the same type of hydrangea as the Invincible Spirit 2, which we just heard about on the radio station. That's an arborescence with the big round bloom. This is a paniculata. It's got the kind of long pointed bloom, and this one has really interesting color because it starts out when it first blooms a creamy white, and then it transitions into a deep pomegranate pink color.
Oh.
So you get a couple colors as the season goes on. So it's going to bloom for you midsummer and continue all the way to the fall. So you'll get color for weeks and weeks.
Natalie, do these plants react differently to different climates? We're in Chicago where the weather is pretty much the same year-round. It doesn't really vary at all. But in different parts of the country, are the rules a little bit differently for these?
You know, I actually lived in Chicago for about 10 years, and I can attest the weather in Michigan and the weather in Chicago are quite similar, meaning it's different all the time, every day. But yes, a hydrangea will differ depending on your climate. So if you are down south, you're going to want to, plant different things, of course, than you plant here. Luckily, this Firelight hydrangea is hardy all the way to zone 8. So you can really plant this pretty deep into the south. Hydrangeas like a cooling off period. So they're going to do better, actually, in our type of climate where they can cool off a little bit. They're going to have more flowers. So we are ideally suited for hydrangeas. But like I said before, Firelight will really work in a lot of climates. So it's a splendid hydrangea for a lot of people.
We have Natalie Carmoli on the line, and we're talking about Proven Winner Shrubs of the Year. Now, I just planted my low-scape mound aronia, and I don't know what to expect. I've never planted that before. That's part of the giveaway package as well.
It is. It's called a landscape shrub of the year, but we are finding that people want it for their home gardens, and this is why. Low-scape mound aronia is a petite little aronia. So for anyone out there that's used to the large aronia that are going to be, 4 or 5 feet tall, this is a little petite guy that you can plant as a border. You can plant it around the foundations of your home. Let's say you want to plant a bunch of them up to the walkway to your home. They're going to do great. They are super, super tough. They're adaptable to any kind of soil. You just pop them in the ground and they're going to take off. They're going to give you little white flowers in the spring. And then in the summer, those flowers are going to give way to black berries. So an aronia is also called a chokeberry plant. And it's called a chokeberry because those berries are kind of astringent and bitter, but a lot of people like to pick them, make them into jams and juices.
They're edible?
They are edible, yeah. I wouldn't eat them right off the plant. You're going to find they're really, really kind of bitter and sour. But you can cook them down, and they're very healthy. The thing about an aronia is it's a native plant. So it's suited to our area. It's going to be super tough, super easy to grow, and really beautiful.
All right, and the Sonic Bloom Reblooming, I don't know how to say it, plant.
That... Oh, you know what? Not many people do. We actually have a pronunciation video on our YouTube channel about how to pronounce all the different kinds of plants. This is a weigela.
It is.
So, yeah, right. Yeah. Before I knew how it was pronounced, I think I called it weigela or something like that. But it's weigela. And Sonic Bloom is actually the name of the whole series of these weigela that we carry. So there are 5 in the series. So depending on your color preference, you can get a pink one, you can get a red one, you can get one called Pearl that starts out white and transitions to pink. There's Pure Pink, and then one called Ghost, which has kind of a light green chartreuse foliage with red flowers. And these are that old-fashioned kind of plant that's just covered in all these bell-shaped flowers in the spring. And the thing that makes Sonic Bloom weigela different than these old-fashioned weigelas that you may have seen in people's yards for years and years is this one's going to bloom in the spring. It's going to take a rest, and then it's going to bloom again without you having to do a thing to it. So lots and lots of flowers all summer long on Sonic Bloom weigela.
All of them edible?
I wouldn't probably want to eat one.
All right, fair enough.
All right, so this you can go to WGNradio.com/contests, and you can enter to win the best of the best, and you'll receive a 1 gallon container of each of these shrubs of the year that we mentioned. But there's also a rose of the year, and I just planted this last weekend, too. And here's the deal. I'm not a big pink flower lover. These are orange roses, this particular one that I picked up. Just beautiful. Tell us about the At Last Rose.
Yeah, I heard you talking about the At Last Rose last week, and you love it, and I think for a good reason. It is a beautiful peachy-colored rose. It's only going to get to be about 3 feet tall, so you can pop it into a lot of places in your landscape. And the thing that makes this rose different from a lot of shrub roses is that scent. So hybrid tea roses are usually the type that have that beautiful rose scent that you're used to smelling. When everybody reaches, you know, whenever you see a rose, you go down and you go to smell the rose, and the hybrid tea roses are usually the ones that have the scent. The problem is they're hard to grow. They get a lot of like black spot on their foliage. They're really susceptible to fungus, so they take a lot of TLC to keep looking beautiful in your garden. But shrub roses are naturally disease resistant. Ours are especially disease resistant. We test them for 10 years or more before we put them out on the market. So it's resistant to black spot. It's resistant to mildew. Like all of our shrubs, you can pop them out in the landscape, and they're going to look beautiful for you all summer.
Now, you can find proven winners at a lot on many of your favorite garden centers. I just happened upon them years ago when I started planting, moved into a home 20 years ago and said, I've never really planted anything. I'm going to try it. And, you know, hit or miss. Sometimes you do well, sometimes not. Mm-hmm. But this has become such a great summer pastime for me. And it's we can plant for a while. You can plant all through summer, can't you?
Absolutely. You can plant well into the fall. I like to tell people when they think, you know, all your planting time has done because it's fall, that's the best time to plant a shrub. Because, you know, unlike your annuals that are all done in the end of the summer, you can put your shrub in the fall, and then it'll just go dormant in the wintertime, and then you've got something brand new and exciting that's blooming for you in the spring.
Natalie, you mentioned the rose of the year and the shrub of the year. What does a plant or a flower have to do to be named that honor? What makes them the plant or the rose of the shrub?
Is there a talent competition?
There'd have to be a talent competition.
It's a beauty competition. No.
Oh.
It's a beauty and performance. So I guess, yeah, it is a talent. And seriously, the way we choose our shrubs of the year is we go to a group we call our gold key growers. So these are the growers that are moving a lot of product. They're, you know, we sell little tiny plants. We sell them to growers. They grow them to a good size so that the garden centers can sell them to consumers.
Yeah.
So they know what the garden centers are looking for. They know what's in demand and what seems to be trending right now. And they say, well, you know, I would like to have this assortment of plants to be the plant of the year 2 years from now. So we already know what we're going to have in 2020. We know what we're going to have in 2021. So they help us choose, and then we can put a lot of marketing behind that to make sure that people really know that these plants are going to be at your garden center and available, and there's going to be plenty of product there so people won't be disappointed when they get there and they're looking for a Firelight Hydrangea or an Atlas Rose.
All right, well, enter to win. The best of the best proven winners go to WGNradio.com/contests. And Natalie Carmoli, Proven Winners Marketing Specialist. I just want to say there is no right or wrong. Go to provenwinners.com because they list a bunch of information, a lot of videos and questions answered, and basically pick your favorite colors and go for it.
Yeah, you can also go to, there's another website, it's nationalplantsoftheyear.com, and that is the Proven Winners site that has not only our shrubs of the year, they have the annuals of the year, they have the perennials of the year, so that's a great resource too if you want to check out all of the national plants of the year from Proven Winners.
Thank you so much, Natalie, nice to meet you, nationalplantsoftheyear.com.
Yes, it's a very nice site.
Thank you so much. Happy
Thank
planting.
You. Same to you.
Thanks, Natalie. There's a new documentary about the great Chris Farley, and Matt Kassane, who is involved in that documentary, will join us right after the news. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Jacket and belt too tight, and he wasn't even being funny. Then he cartwheeled around the room and slow danced with a cleaning lady. He was a one-man party. You know I'm talking about, my friend Chris Farley.
I'm covered in goosebumps right now. Adam Sandler was the host of Saturday Night Live and did that tribute to Chris Farley. And, Bill, we got to interview him when that ninja thing he did with Nicolette Sheridan, that movie.
Right.
And he was so sweet and tender off the air, and just as soon as the mics go on,
he was
cray,
a tornado. He was an absolute tornado. Matt Kassane joins us right now, a longtime actor and comedian, and I hope this is fair to say, the best impersonator of Chris Farley that I've ever seen.
Thank you very much.
How are you, Matt? Nice to see you.
I'm great. I remember you guys. We used to hang out back in the 90s.
We sure did.
We did at the Loop radio station, and then you guys used to do stand-up together?
Several times.
A lot of weird gigs.
Only at clubs that were not good.
Please explain that one you were just saying off the air, because I can't even imagine it.
There was a club in Indiana that Matt and I worked at together on a New Year's Eve, and the room was shaped. It was one of two comedy clubs that had this. It was shaped like a V. So the stage was at the apex of the V, and then the people on the left side of the room and the right side of the room couldn't see each other. There was a divider in between. So you would do the show, and if somebody said something on one side of the room, the other side didn't hear it, didn't know what it was a reference to.
Do a lot of clubs do that? Because
only two that I've ever worked at.
Was that a J room?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Was it? Okay.
A man named Jay Burke would book those clubs.
That seems crazy.
It was nuts.
So, Matt, you have been in the entertainment business for a long time.
Yeah.
And when did you start doing Chris Farley?
I started doing Farley in the late 90s. I was always doing it like offstage with, like, for Mike Toomey. Mike and I would be backstage at a comedy club in between in the green room, and I would just pretend I was Matt Foley to get him pumped for the late show. I'd be like, come on, Mike, you gotta get up there and you gotta kick some butt or you're not going to amount to Jack Squat!
It's a good motivator.
Yeah.
It's a very good motivator.
So it started as just something to
just
make Toomey laugh.
Just goofing around with the comics backstage. Yeah.
But when you would do it on stage, like you would already be on stage doing well, and then something would happen that would turn you into Matt Foley, and the crowd would just, you'd see their jaws drop, like, look at this transformation.
It was quite fun. When I first started doing it, it was just a little bit of at the end of my stand-up act, and it was right after Chris passed away, and I'd just be like, hey, you guys want to see a little Farley? And the crowd would go crazy, you know, especially here in the Midwest, Illinois, and Wisconsin. And then as time went on, and I got married, and I got really fat, I started dressing up like him, and then Jeff Hoover would start having me on WGN Morning News, and the station got calls the first time I did it. We got to have that guy come into our high school reunion. What's that guy's name? Like, and right away it just was like, man, this seems like a pretty cool way to make an extra few bucks, you know? So it just kind of worked out.
Now, the story that I heard, tell me if this is true or not, is that some of those calls into WGN TV didn't realize you were impersonating him. They thought somehow he had magically come back.
What?
Right. Yeah. People Like, I thought he had passed away.
Was that the guy with the V
news.
Comedy Club
yeah,
they're
the
called?
Same guy.
He faked his own death.
Yes.
I'm back. I'm not dead. I'm ready to go.
This came pretty naturally for you. I mean, obviously, you perfected it and you've watched.
First things first, got to be honest with you. You have to be a fat Irish guy in order to be able to do it properly, okay?
No imitations.
You have to be loud. You have to be brought up in a loud Irish family whose father yelled at you a lot when you were a kid, just like Chris's dad. I thought I told you boys to sweep the driveway!
Did you ever get to meet Chris?
I did.
You did? And what was that like?
It was while he was at Second City. He was performing on the main stage, and I was a student at Second City taking classes there. And we used to go see Chris, and because that was part of the deal. If you were taking Players Workshop, you used to be able to go and watch the shows.
Sure.
And Chris was our idol. We loved him, and so we'd go see him. And one night after the show, he was hanging out in front of Second City. He had his rugby jacket on from Tommy Boy. I'm not making this up. And he was just standing out there like a lost puppy all by himself, just like kind of like staring off into space. Like just we were like, Chris, what are you doing? He was like, I'm just hanging out here, you know. And so like we're going across the street to the Old Town Ale House. Come and have a few beers with us. And, you know, he did. He came across the street and it was really cool. It was great.
He had the strangest energy of any human being I've ever met. At auditions, I would always see him. He'd be reading the script and laughing hysterically at how bad the script was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of these commercial auditions, it's not exactly Shakespeare. But he'd go, look what they put over here. They want you to say this out loud. And I go, yeah, that's how an audition works.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. The guy was,
God,
the
I
guy,
loved him.
He was amazing. You had to see him live in order to really appreciate him, though. We saw him at Second City so many times.
Yeah.
I actually saw him do Matt Foley at Second City. And it was before they had incorporated into an actual run. It was just in the rehearsal spots. After the actual show, they would have rehearsals at Second City. They would say, you guys could stick around. We're going to like work out the kinks on this new skit. And that's when I saw him do Matt Foley in front of about 30 people.
Wow.
It was really cool.
Wow.
This is Matt Cassane. You're a comedian, actor, all-around nice guy. Tell us about this A&E thing. It airs Monday, right?
It's Monday, the 27th, Memorial Day, at 8 p.m. Central here in Chicago. And I was contacted by Brent Hodge, who is the director of the original Chris Farley documentary called I Am Chris Farley, which aired on Spike back in 2015. I had no idea these guys were going to be calling me. They just called me out of the blue. They asked me if they could come and interview me at my home in Villa Park, and then the next day we went to Second City, and I got to dress up as Matt Foley on the main stage and do Matt Foley.
Nice.
On, I know, right?
What, that so
was
nice.
Nuts. It was crazy.
Matt, normally if a documentarian makes a film about something, when it's done, he goes, all right, I've done that, and now it's time to move on to something else. What would make him want to do a second Chris Farley documentary? What's new about this one?
Pretty sure more money.
Is it more money?
I think A&E's yeah. just got a bigger audience.
All right. So, yeah. That sells. All right.
All right, but we all loved Chris Farley. I mean, I feel we did more because he was from here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he just captured everybody's love. So I would watch documentary after documentary.
Oh, yeah.
I'll keep watching them for the rest of my life.
Absolutely. I've seen them all. I've seen them all several times. I actually bought the DVD, I Am Chris Farley, that we were just talking about that came out in 2015. And when Brett was at my house interviewing me, I brought it down and he autographed it for me.
Yeah.
So it was really cool.
I will quickly cite two examples, which if somebody said to me, prove that Chris Farley was a genius, these would be the first two examples I would use. The interview show where he tells people things like, remember when you were in the Beatles,
yeah.
to Paul McCartney?
Yeah.
Because we all have an element of that.
Yes.
You know, everybody...
And that was great.
Right.
That was the
right.
best.
Do
right.
you remember when you were in the Beatles?
Yeah. Right. There's a part of that in every one of us, and he was the first person to figure that out.
Yes.
The other one was the scene he did with Patrick Swayze where they were both auditioning to be Chippendale's dancers.
Oh, yeah.
Because even though he was a big guy, he proved how he wasn't just physical, but he could so use it to his advantage.
Yes.
He had the moves, you
great.
Guys.
He was
he
fantastic.
And he made it okay for fat guys to take off their shirts at sporting events.
I guess he did, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah.
It was okay then.
All right, we'll talk.
It was sexy.
Oh, he was so sexy.
God, I loved him.
Matt Cassane is here. We're talking about the great Chris Farley. There's a documentary about him coming out this weekend. Stick around. More ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we're visiting with local treasure, Matt Cassane. I'm just going to call him that.
You're a
now.
Local treasure, Matt.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate that.
Very, very welcome. Very welcome.
Matt Cassane is, Chris, can I say a Chris Farley impersonator?
That's fine, yeah.
All right, I don't know what to say. And,
that's cool.
You're going to be part of this Chris Farley Anything for a Laugh. It premieres Monday, 8 p.m. Central Time on the A&E Network. And any members of Chris's family involved in this as well? Any of his brothers?
Well, I know Kevin was on Good Morning America, his brother Kevin Farley, yesterday promoting it. So I know he's involved. So I'm not sure about the other guys, but I know Kevin is for sure.
And you haven't seen it. So, I mean, I'm just wondering, like, are they going to say, here's a Chris Farley impersonator. Here's a guy who just really, I'm anxious to see this.
I am too. And I'm hoping, my fingers are crossed that I do not get cut out of this thing because I have, like, really promoted this for, like, several months now.
Matt,
boy, will I look bad.
You'll have to give us the time back. I don't know. We got to figure out how to do that, Bill.
Okay.
There was some hero worship with him, with Chris Farley and with John Belushi. He absolutely idolized Belushi and then ends up dying at the same age as John Belushi.
It's nuts, right?
What do you make of that?
It's, you know what? I think every kid from the Midwest who grew up in that generation grew up watching SNL. Even me, I was a huge Belushi fan. As a matter of fact, when I was a senior in high school, our Halloween dance, I dressed up as Belushi. Pluto.
Did you?
I had a sweatshirt that just said college on it.
Yeah.
So it's sad. I mean, I wish Chris would have like just kind of slowed down and just, you know, taken better care of himself.
But all of his friends, the people closest to him, would say, "You idolize John so much. Can't you see that you're heading in that direction?" And he just didn't listen. Doesn't that
well,
kill you?
Guys,
kinda?
Sometimes,
it's a shooting star, man.
Yeah. I mean, you know, his plan was not to die. I mean,
right. No. Right.
He did try to straighten himself out quite a few times, but it was unfortunate.
What do you think he'd be doing if Chris had made it? What do you think he'd be involved in today? What do you think he'd be doing?
He'd be in all the grown-up movies with grown-ups with Sandler and Spade and all those guys.
Yeah.
He'd be having fun. He'd be doing his Fatty Arbuckle movie.
He wanted to do that.
Yes, yeah. He did.
He really did.
He'd be Shrek. He'd be the voice of Shrek. He was going to be that.
And that was planned, wasn't it?
Yeah. He was signed on to do that.
Yeah, he would have had a great career. Chris was awesome, man. So he would have kept going.
They always say,
chugging along.
I've asked Dan Aykroyd that about John Belushi because toward the end of John's life, his way too short life, he was starting to delve into different things, doing more serious roles. Do you think Chris would have done more serious roles at some point?
I think the Fatty Arbuckle thing, even though Fatty was a comedian, it took a serious turn when he got accused of all that stuff. So I think it would have been more of a dramatic show. Yeah.
Right.
I am so deeply touched by the friendship that Chris Farley, Adam Sandler, and David Spade had. Am I leaving anyone out? It was kind of the three amigos there.
Those guys would have made some great films, man.
Yeah.
It would have been really cool to see what they would have put out.
I mean, seeing Adam Sandler do that tribute on SNL, it's like you can tell that he still thinks of Chris each and every day. And every time David Spade's interviewed about him, it's just this feeling of love that they had. I'm so sad for them.
It's hard to sit and watch those interviews and not get a little choked up. You know, it really isn't. Just what would have been?
Here's an interesting text. Ask your guest if he's related to the Cassanes who live across the street from me. No name, just no town.
I'm
are
gonna,
you related to that?
I'm going
to
say no.
No?
I'm going to give it a,
interesting.
I'm gonna give it a big no.
I didn't see that coming.
Big thumbs down.
Right. That's perfect. Are you still doing stand-up?
I get out there. Actually, I've done stand-up twice now in the past month. These little open micers out in my town of Villa Park, and then I hit this place in Berwyn. And they're you know, it's just the type of place where you don't really have to have any kind of like pull to get on stage. You just kind of show up and you sign up and you just go up and do it. So,
right.
I still like doing stand-up. I really do. It really is a lot of fun. It is.
You've been doing Chicago TV, too. Were you on Med or Hope or...
I did Chicago Med in 2017. I did an episode of a show that got canceled on Fox called APB, where I actually had speaking lines. Yeah, so it was pretty cool. I had a good time doing those.
All right, and a lot of texts. Matt Foley's a real person, right? What's the story on that? He was Chris Farley's college roommate. He's now Father Matt Foley, a pastor at St. James Parish in Arlington Heights.
This is true.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it is true. And he played rugby with Chris back in the college days, yeah.
And does he have any of those same mannerisms or personality quirks as
not,
Matt Foley?
Not at all. Just a sweet, laid-back man. Absolutely. Chris just took his name and that was it.
Did Farley work at Kelly's Pub near DePaul?
That I do not know.
I don't know if you're a Chris Farley historian or archivist.
I don't know that.
You know, Steve Bertrand, who does our news, went to college with Chris.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. Very cool.
Yeah.
So we'd be at the Green Tree Pub after those rugby games.
And he played?
Nice. Yeah. He played. I mean, I was at, that was a
Marquette,
year after
right,
me.
Steve?
Yeah. But the green tree was where everyone went after the rugby games, where you had to wear special shoes. You couldn't wear them anywhere else because the floor was so bad in that bar.
Could you, back then in college, could you see that this was his career trajectory, that that's where he was headed, Steve, or not?
Well, I think, you know, he was in college like he was out of college. He was, could be so sweet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then just a wild guy. But yeah, we had our first, we had introduction to public speaking together. There were about 15 of us in the class. And I'm not kidding you, the professor had a heart attack halfway through.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Why am I laughing at that?
I know. Horrible. Wait. For real? He did?
Sorry. Not in the class, but yeah, he had to be replaced halfway through the semester. Because he had a coronary issue.
Wow.
And that's one of the classes I remember a few of the other people in there, too. We had a good time in that class.
Oh, man.
And did he actually play rugby, or was he just like somersaults and weird things on the field?
He really did?
He played. He played rugby, yeah. If you watch the opening to Tommy Boy, where he's, you know, in the frat with the guys and he's wearing the rugby jacket, that's pretty much what Chris's life in college is all about. You know, he was a rugby player for sure, definitely. A lot of keg parties.
Although, who didn't partake in those back then?
Sure,
I sure did.
Absolutely.
I did a real mean beer bong, I'll tell you that.
Nice.
It was popular then.
No, wait a minute. That. Are you talking then and now?
Though? No, now bit. I could never do it.
No? Okay.
You got to work up. You know, I can't do it. I'm out of practice.
Wouldn't you say, though, Matt, that if, you know, you hear the phrase larger than life, like if somebody uses that phrase, Chris Farley is the first person I think of because he truly was. He was larger than life.
He was, man. And like I said, when I used to go see him at Second City, he was such a big guy, but he would own that stage and he would make all these moves and just like in the Chippendale skit. I mean, he could really move for a big dude.
Right.
You know? He could dance, you know, he could move.
Oh,
and
totally.
He was nimble.
You'd see him at Second City just going crazy and then Sunday night he'd be at Mass at St. Michael's about two blocks away.
Oh, for sure. He was a very devout Catholic, too.
It's that Irish Catholic, and it just came from a big, loving family,
yes,
you know?
He did.
God, I really miss him. I'm thinking, and I don't know if this was SNL or what, but it was hooked up to the wire and just acting like
he,
yes. Oh, my God. Yeah. Just every time I see him, I guess a living person like that now is Will Ferrell. I see him and I just laugh, but with Chris, it was just, you loved him.
Actually, if you don't, I don't know if you guys realize this, but Chris and Will were actually in a skit together on SNL when Chris came back to host in 1997. Chris was was Matt Foley, the motivational speaker, and he was training people at a gym, and Will was in that skit. So,
wow. All right, somebody said Chris Farley worked at Kincaid's, not Kelly's, near each other though. So
that's cool.
But right. I'm sure
I didn't
people
know
saw him. Yeah, we'll put that down, and as you become his historian and archivist,
I will. I'm gonna get that. I'm gonna write that down.
Did you ever see that? It's a very fast clip, but they always show it in any of the retrospects of his days on Saturday Night Live, where it's him. He's dressed as a girl, and David Spade is dressed as a girl, and he's using a very sweet voice.
Yes,
but then somebody reaches over and takes his food, and he goes, "Don't touch my fries!" Like the devil.
Leave me alone! I'm starving.
Yeah.
God, I could just sit here and reminisce all day. I cannot wait to see this. He's Matt Cassane.
Yeah.
You can follow him on social media, Facebook, Twitter. Just Google Matt Cassane and you'll find it. KISSANE. You might see him in Villa Park, but definitely watch A&E Monday, 8 p.m. It's called Chris Farley, Anything for a Laugh. I hope you made the cut, dude.
Thank you very much. Can I just say hi to my little girl, Eugenia?
Hi, Eugenia.
All right. We don't have time. Cut them off.
Wish we could.
Hi, Eugenia.
Thank
so
you,
nice
Matt.
To see you
Thank
again.
You. Thanks, guys.
A quick break, some news, more show ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here, 720.
Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. On the line with us right now, our usual Friday guest, Alexander Zeldin, the managing editor of Decider.com, a great website if you like television and entertainment. Hi, Alexander. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
On the show yesterday, we talked quite a bit about the revival of All in the Family and the Jeffersons that aired on ABC a couple of nights ago. What was your take on it? What did you think of that?
Well, I've only seen some clips of it. The general feeling around The Office that folks were talking about was that it was good. There were good performances. We'd love to see a riff on it, you know, something a little bit different done with it, a little bit more of an updating. It was very faithful, which was interesting to watch. But it would be curious to see these actors do a more modern take on the revival.
You know, at first when I was watching it, the first 8 to 10 minutes, I felt exactly that. I wish they had updated the script. This is was written 45 years ago. It doesn't hold up. But then as I watched the whole, the rest of it, I really came to enjoy it, and I was thrilled that they didn't change it. I know that's contrary to a lot of people's thoughts were, but I liked the, it would be like seeing something in a museum that was created, you know, a long time ago. You don't want them to change it and update it. You want to see how it was originally. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I, the thing that I liked about it, and I really, even more than the actual execution, like the idea of it, is treating it like a play, which these were even more so than current three-camera sitcoms, where you're doing it in front of an audience, you're doing a revival. It's okay if a play travels around and has a different cast each time. The material still lasts.
Right.
So we've seen that happen a little bit more with movies, where you'll have staged all-star readings of the movies. Not staged, I guess, just readings of the movies with an all-star cast. It's great that they're doing that with TV as well, because those scripts feel like they're preserved in time. So why not bring them back out? Why not show why Norman Lear and everybody else were amazing writers?
This did very well in the ratings. Does this mean everybody's looking through other old shows saying, hey, bring Flipper back. People want to see Flipper. What are we going to see next, do you think?
Yeah, we're going to see Flipper live. Woody Harrelson is going to do Flipper as well. He's going to be in everything from now on. I'll tell you, there was a really interesting note during Fox's upfront presentation. They had a call for press and for advertisers and media beforehand, and they very casually mentioned on the side, which I didn't see a lot of people pick up on, they were asked about their schedule, not this summer, but the summer afterwards, and they said, yeah, we're looking at things like live comedy events. Now, this was before this thing was broadcast this past week, and my suspicion about it is that as live musicals have trended downwards in the ratings, everybody's looking for that next live event that they can do, that they can roll out, will get everybody talking, tweeting, buzzed on the same night. And since this did do well, I think we're going to see a lot of clones on it, a lot of different networks going forward.
Interesting. Very, very interesting.
I've been telling Bill, I think you brought up to us The Act with Patricia Arquette. I watched it. I binged it. I couldn't stop watching it. I was horrified. I was entertained. It's really great.
Yeah, for those of you who haven't checked it out, it's about Gypsy Rose Lee Blanchard. There's a real-life case. She was essentially gaslit and almost imprisoned by her mother for years, eventually worked out a plot to kill her, and nobody comes out well at it. One of our writers, Kayla Cobb, has done an excellent job writing about the show on Decider. You check out all of her research and all of her writing. She compared the true story to what actually happened on screen. This was a huge hit for Hulu. I think their biggest show of all time, even bigger than Handmaid's Tale, which has been transformative in the culture. And as far as we've heard, they're actually going to be doing another one, which is interesting. They're going to focus different characters, different case, but take the same sort of look at it and really delving into the psyches of what went on when you're going through as big of a con job as these two characters did.
And this is on Hulu, you're saying,
yeah,
right? Okay.
So they will take another story and dramatize that? All right, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's very unclear exactly how they're going to do it, because, of course, Gypsy Rose Lee's story and their mother's story in particular are over. They're done, you know. Gypsy
and
Rose,
they were
is
so out there. I mean, oh my God.
Yeah, I don't know how you're going to match it, honestly, in a second season, but certainly there are a lot of scammers that have been out there and a lot of crazy cases that happen. So if they do want to go forward through with it, and I'm sure Hulu does, they'll figure out a way to make a second season.
Maybe, Alex, an approach like they do on HBO with True Detective, where it's kind of the same theme, but it's a different idea, a different cast, maybe?
A lot of folks are going for that now, where they're making it more of an anthology. I don't know if you're watching Chernobyl on HBO right now.
No, I wanted to ask you about that. Everybody's raving about this.
This is one, again, not to keep shouting out Kayla, but she does an amazing job on these true crime and true life stories. She's been doing some incredible coverage of Chernobyl. It's a dramatization of the events of Chernobyl, but the interesting thing that they're doing is as they release the series and as they dramatize events in the series, the producer and the writer are doing a podcast, which you can subscribe to anywhere, called the Chernobyl Podcast, where they talk about the process of creating the script, and they say, okay, here's how we veered away from it. This is why we dramatized it this way versus how it actually happened in real life. And for the most part, it's very harrowing to watch. It's very awful to watch. It's gritty. It's not fun at all. You're not going to be like, ooh, what's going to happen next up at Chernobyl or anything like that. But it's a beautifully done show with a real-life basis. And Kayla talked to the creator of the show, and he said the same sort of thing, that if they do a second season, it's not going to be Chernobyl 2. You'll focus on another disaster with maybe some of the same elements of the cast, but go that anthology route.
And that's is that Robin Harris from Mad Men? Is he the star of that or one of the stars?
Jared Harris. The creepiest actors in Hollywood are all on Chernobyl. So if you want to get creeped out, definitely check that out today.
Speaking of creeping out, The Perfection on Netflix starts today or tomorrow? Today, I think, right?
Yeah, this is a new film on Netflix, drops today. It stars Allison Williams from Get Out and Logan Browning from Dear White People. It's not great, according to a reviewer, Adam Etta, but it is very gory. And if you're looking for kind of a gross horror movie, it's quick. You know, it's not over 2 hours or anything like that. And it might be a gross, fun one to watch late at night over the weekend.
I like her a lot. I like Ella. I've only seen her in a few things, but everything I've seen her in so far, I really like her in.
There is, in the middle, without spoiling anything, there's about a 15 to 20 minute sequence, which is just Allison Williams and Logan Browning in a van together, which is very, very harrowing. And again, Anna, our reviewer said, if you are going to check out the movie, it's worth checking out just for the sequence.
We've got Alexander Zalbin with us, the managing editor of Decider.com. We're going to take a quick break. If you have any questions or comments, we're at 312-981-7200. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I think your trousers are too tight. Alexander Zalbin's here, the managing editor of Decider.com. We're talking television. Again, if you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. We'll get to some of your questions next. But first, a documentary about Game of Thrones. I remember when Game of Thrones used to be on, Alex.
Oh, man. It's really great to revisit that show after everybody was so happy about the finale.
Yes.
It's been enough time. We
yes.
talked about it. We're past it. It's all good.
Yes.
But there is HBO is not letting the Game of Thrones thing go anytime soon. There are going to be some prequels and sequels and we don't know what down the road. But if you accidentally think there's one more episode of Game of Thrones, good news, there kind of is. This Sunday at 9 p.m., it's a two-hour documentary called Game of Thrones, The Last Watch. And there's been a lot of documentary series material that they put out over the course of the season, but this looks like this has some new bits. It's going to be about the making of the final season, as well as shout-outs to the fans, and they're promising some very emotional goodbyes to the characters and the actors. So even if you were mixed about the last couple of episodes, such as I was and several other viewers were as well, this might be something worth checking out.
How about this, Alex? You get Charlize Theron and her family, and you just call it Game of Thrones. Would people watch that, do you think? I think they would.
100%. Yeah. I mean, people are misspelling it all the time anyway, so yeah. I'm sure it would just come up in searches, and it would do great.
Here's an idea that I love. This, listen to this. Historical Roasts. This is on Netflix. Explain what's going on with this show, Historical Roasts. I think this is great.
I got to tell you, I'm not the hugest fan of roast, but I'm actually very excited for this series. It debuts Monday, Memorial Day, so you should have plenty of time to watch it. Jeff Ross, who's the roast master general of the world, has rounded up a bunch of comedians and actors and famous people, just like you would for any roast, except they're actually roasting historical figures, and everybody is dressed in historical garb. So, for example, there's an episode where they roast Abraham Lincoln. There's one where they roast Freddie Mercury. Other historical characters like that. I have no idea what's going to happen, but it sounds really interesting and goofy and fun and might get around the whole uncomfortableness of making fun of a real person to their face.
I think this is brilliant.
It does sound really good. I was talking to Bill about this off the air. You had mentioned the Tim Robinson, I think you should leave. I gave it a shot. My son Michael is 20. He loves it. I watched every episode. I don't know how I feel, and my son claims it's an age thing. I said, are you saying I'm too old? And he goes, no, but it might be more of a young guy thing. I wanted to like it. It's kind of over the top. I've watched them all. If it comes back, I'll watch it again, but I'm just, what do you think about that?
Well, it's sort of cringe humor a little bit, right? It's certainly about making people uncomfortable. So if that's not your thing, you're not going to like it. And in general, humor is subjective. I never really get to it to everything needs to be unequivocally funny for everybody across the board, because different things strike people funny in different ways. So I know there's a lot of people who are huge fans of the show. They like writing. They like the cameos about it. Definitely when you're talking about sketch comedy, you can break it down to, okay, I like this sketch, but I didn't like this sketch. But if you didn't like it, that's fine. I don't think it's necessarily an age thing. It may just be a sense of humor thing. And you can tell your son I said that.
All right.
I think it's so funny, but it's a show that as funny as I thought it was, I have a hard time recommending it to other people because I know that a lot of people are going to go, you thought that was funny? But I do. I think it's really funny.
It's kind of funny. It's just very bizarre, and it's very unique. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
We have a question from here. Is Fargo coming back?
Yes, Fargo is coming back. They're working on the fourth season right now. It and this is kind of a little bit of a crazy casting, but it stars Chris Rock. That's the only person that we know is in it. They're going to start filming it in late 2019. It should debut sometime in 2020. And this season is going to be set in the 1950s in Kansas City. That's all we know about it currently, but it was kind of a big surprise because everybody thought, well, three seasons, they have a three seasons of the anthology, they'll be done, but nope, they're coming back for more.
There you
go, man.
I like
that they always call the show and the movie Fargo, and yet very little of it actually takes place in Fargo. That's funny.
Yeah, it's inspired by the tone of the movie more than anything.
Yeah.
And one of the fun things about it is the more you watch it and the more you really concentrate on it, you can see little Easter eggs and things that they've looped throughout. It's a great show if you've never checked it out.
All right, some questions. We go to the phone lines. Diana is on. Diana Alexander Zalbin.
Hello. My question is on The Village. Do you know anything about that, if it's coming back or not?
The Village?
Yes.
I don't know about that, actually. Let me look into that for you.
Diane, what is that? What is The Village?
It's like an apartment building in New York City, and everybody knows everybody, and it's all their stories and everything. And I got really into it.
Oh, it's a comedy or drama?
Drama.
No,
drama?
It's a drama.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one that debuted in March, I believe, right? So
yes.
It might be a little early to know about a pickup or a cancellation for that.
Okay.
The networks just announced their new schedule, but shows like that that debut late in the year, sometimes they'll put off a decision until fall or winter. So hopefully if it did well, it'll come back.
Thank you, Diana. And Dan has called us with his question. Alexander Zalbin, Dan, what's your question?
Yeah, hello. I had heard that For the People on ABC had been canceled, and I'd feel really bad about that because I thought the writing was excellent and the characters were well drawn. I'm just curious if you know anything about that.
Yeah, I know there are a lot of people who are really big fans of the show. It ran for two seasons on ABC. I think that's one that, this is just my two cents, unfortunately I do think it's probably done at this point, because it had a little bit more of the procedural elements, the serial elements, so I think they can look at it as, okay, we got through what we needed to get through, it wasn't quite working in the ratings, so we're done with that for the moment, but if you do want to check out the two seasons, they are streaming online, so as you said, I've been surprised, pleasantly surprised about the outpouring of fans for that show, or to see it go. So if you do want to see more, the best thing to always do is just keep watching it on a loop online and see if the networks notice.
Thank you, Dan. And speaking of bringing shows back, The Kids Are All Right. I know I've mentioned this a lot. I'm bummed that ABC canceled it, but there have been articles aplenty, one just recently in Forbes, and fans are trying to save it. I have signed many petitions. What are the chances of things like that actually having ABC go, you know what, we changed our mind? Do things like that happen, or another network could swoop in?
You know, there are so many decisions that go into these sort of things, it makes it tricky to say. For something like Kids Are All Right, I believe it's actually produced by ABC, so which makes it a little bit tricky in terms of if you say had a show that was produced by CBS Studios, but on ABC, if they canceled it, CBS Studios might say, okay, we have a couple of other networks, other places we can shop it to see if it makes sure it sets with the budget. But if ABC owns the whole thing, they might say, it's done. And then it would be up to them letting the rights go to the executive producers who would then be able to shop it around. So that's what makes that part a little tricky there. You know, you could never say never, but it's always going to come down to how much does the show cost? Are the actors still available? And does another network have the budget to actually pick it up? So lots of questions before they need to move forward with something else.
Alex, we only have a minute, but I'm curious about this. Ali Wong is an actress on Fresh Off the Boat, but she's got a burgeoning career in movies. They just renewed Fresh Off the Boat. She seemed upset about it because she wanted to, you know, go more into films than television.
Shame on her.
I know. Are they going to replace her on the show, or what are they going to do?
Well, actually, just a little correction. That was Constance Wu.
Oh, Constance Wu.
Is on Fresh. Constance Wu. Right. Ali Wong, also very awesome. She's in a movie called Always Be My Baby that's going to be on Netflix later this month, which is great. Constance Wu, not going to be replaced. There was a flap. She was upset about stuff. Tried to dial it back a bunch of times. It didn't quite work. But I think ultimately she's important to that show. That show is important to people. They're certainly all seemingly front-facing on the same page with it. So I don't think she's going anyplace anytime soon, whether behind the scenes she would like that or not.
But if you're the producer of the show and you hear her come out and say,
bye-bye,
I don't want to, yeah, do you still want to keep her around? Is she bad for morale, or what do you think?
Or for viewers, are people going to be irritated by that?
I mean, I think you have a serious talking to, right? You know,
yeah.
People sometimes, particularly when you're in a high-pressure environment like a TV show, you get exhausted, you get tired, you lash out about things, and it comes down to how you have that conversation. And frankly, I don't know anything about the behind the scenes, but if they sat down with her and said, listen, do you really want to be let go of this contract? We'll figure it out if it's best for everybody. Then they'd figure that out. But as is, I'd imagine they can't figure that out. They do need to keep her on board to the show. And they said, listen, you just got to get on board. You got to be positive about it. We'll get through the season. We'll see what happens.
Alex, have a great holiday weekend, and we'll talk to you a week from today, okay?
All right. You too. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks.
That's Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com.
And we're going to take a break. Is that cool?
Let's take a break.
And then we're going to find out about some options to grill for this Memorial Day weekend. Bill, I have just found out it's going to rain the entire weekend.
I know. I just saw that, too.
Also, yeah. I wanted to tell you, we talked about pools and how, you know, if you smell a chlorine smell, it's actually the chlorine reacting to some of the accidents that could have happened. And I just want to tell you something else as we're going into this Memorial Day weekend. Swimming pools contain up to 3 ounces of number one per person,
excellent,
according to a doctor.
That's great news.
Don't open your mouth.
No. No.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we have a special guest in the studio with us. She loves animals, Elizabeth Alfano. She does the Awesome Vegans podcast on WGN Plus. You can look it up. Also host of the Celebrity Dinner Party. You are a vegan, I can say that.
That's, I sure am.
You're proud of it?
Oh, sure love it. Sure do love it.
Yeah, I am not one.
How many years under this?
Well, so it's this
under
one,
your plastic belt.
Under my plant-based belt, right, yeah. Yeah. My recycled plastic belt.
Yes.
So I was trying to go vegan for the longest time, and I really didn't think it was an option. You know, the voices out there were sort of saying, you have to eat meat, and I never liked it. And about 3.5 years ago, I was like, you know, I can advocate for myself here, and I can put together the facts and the information and realize it's better for me, it's better for the planet, it's better for animals. Why the heck not?
Yep. So it's been 3.5 years.
Yeah, 3.5 years.
Wow. And you've never gone back once?
Oh, gosh, no.
Never once?
No, that's not true. In the first year, on month 3, I had had this big meeting, and I thought, okay, I'm going to celebrate with pizza, and I got a veggie pizza, cheese only. Oh, was I sick.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Just
but what are the first
awful.
four letters of meeting? Meat. You got to have meat in a meeting.
Well, not spelled, my kind of meeting.
I know it's spelled differently. Well, congrats.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. It's super fun. So, you know, and it has been quite the year for plant-based meat alternatives. I don't know who's following the Beyond Meat stock.
It's going
up. Oh,
my
way
word.
Up. So they started at $25. That day, it shot up like to almost 70. It was the largest leap for an IPO since 2008. It went up 163% in one day. I just checked right before I walked in here, and it's like 83 today.
Hmm.
So
I know
really
I sound
exciting.
Like a broken record, but I have been opposed to fake meat, I'm going to say, for a long time. This is a plant-based burger. And Bill, I was the one that told you, you got to at least try it.
Mm-hmm.
it tastes like meat. I can't believe it's not meat. That's what it should be called. Yeah. I can't believe it's not meat.
There's actually a restaurant in Chicago called I Can't Believe It's Not Meat.
Really?
In Hyde Park. Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to quickly do a shout out to Veggie Grill because they're the awesome people that brought us the basic Beyond Burger today. They also brought us a Lux Burger, which has lots of mushrooms and a creamy Alfredo sauce on it. And they also brought us the Steakhouse Burger, which has some fake and bacon. And
that's what you, that's
Bill
fake bacon.
Even good. Tell that. Yeah. I know it, people. I know it.
Last night, it's very strange that you're here today. Last night, my wife barbecued for my daughters. I was playing tennis. When I got back, she said, we'll make some food for you. It'll be ready for you when you get back. So I had a burger, and then when I was done, she goes, how was it? I go, it was outstanding. So she looked at my daughters, and she said, should we tell them? And they all decided, no, they shouldn't tell me. But I said, no, now you have to tell me. It was a Beyond Burger.
But you've already had it.
I had eaten it.
Like
I had no idea that I couldn't tell the difference at all.
And that's so awesome because when you're grilling right there on the spot, it's always going to be even better and even closer to meat than when you order and have delivery like we've done today. And today's Veggie Grill is off the charts awesome. So it's pretty outstanding.
I have found them. I checked beyondburger.com. I looked where to get them. They have them at our Jewel, our Mariano's, at Target. I mean, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
They're probably a little bit more money than ground beef. If you want to replace it with ground beef, that's fine. But if not, it's just an option.
Right. It's just an option. And you're seeing more and more people care about their diet. So, you know, meat has no fiber. So I interviewed John Sally. Remember him?
Basketball player.
Yeah.
Spider.
Spider?
That's his nickname.
Okay, to you, yes, and probably everybody else.
Yes.
So John Sally came over to my kitchen for my podcast, Awesome Vegans, and he was saying, you know, people always ask me, I'm 6'7", how do I get my protein? And I always tell them, it's not how I get your protein, because all protein comes from plants anyways. Cows eat grass, and that's how, so, you know, it's not where you get your protein, it's where you get your fiber for your health. We're talking about cardiac health, etc. So, you know, meat has no fiber, and at least you're getting fiber in this, you know, because it comes from pea protein and mung bean protein and some other great stuff.
So. All right, now I've heard that some of these type of plant-based burgers, the majority of the ingredients is soy. There's no soy in this? Because I know people are allergic to soy as well.
Right. That's right. So there's already a lot of soy in the American diet, in processed foods. So they, Beyond Meat specifically, wanted to avoid soy. Also, I'll give a shout out to our hometown sweetie, Life Light Burger. They are now in stores as well. They don't have soy. And it's also non-GMO. Beyond Meat is a non-GMO burger. Now, there's the Impossible Burger. Have you guys heard about this? Mm-hmm.
White Castle's been serving it. It's easier
Burger
to
King.
Find, I'll tell you, in a fast food type situation.
So that's the deal, right? I kind of think of this as like Jay Leno versus David Letterman. Do you remember those wars?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods. Impossible Foods went into retail, so fast food. They're at White Castle, Red Robin. They're rolling out Burger Kings across the country, 7,200 locations. The PR representative of the Missouri Farm Bureau, Eric Bull, said that the Impossible Whopper was something to be reckoned with and the real deal. So everyone's taking
note. A man
note.
Named Eric Bull is in charge of
the
farm animal?
He is the press
Bull
represent-
or Bull?
B-O-H-L.
Oh,
he's the press rep.
Bull. All right. That would make sense.
I guess. I see what you're
makes
saying.
Sense.
He's the press rep for the Missouri Farm Bureau, and it's in Missouri that the Impossible Whopper
I'm confused
launched.
By this. So it's different brands in a fast food place as opposed to a grocery store, but if you had it in a fast food place and you wanted to replicate it and get it yourself, why wouldn't it be the same company? Are they trying to make that
they
happen?
They just haven't. You know, they're all starting and growing leaps and bounds. I mean, Impossible Foods just put in a third shift because they're running out of the Impossible Whopper everywhere. They can't keep up with Burger King's demand. So they've been going fast food route, and Beyond Meat has been going retail.
Yeah.
But now Beyond Meat is launching into the fast food chains. They're in Carl's Jr. and Del Taco and Epic Burger right here, Veggie Grill. So Veggie Grill is the premier largest plant-based fast food chain. We'll say premier fast food chain across the nation. 33 locations, 3 in Chicago alone. So Beyond Meat is now going they're staying in retail, but they're expanding also to fast food.
Wow.
It's awesome. It's an awesome time.
We have Elizabeth Alfano in the studio. A lot of people are texting that they love your podcast, Awesome Vegans, with Elizabeth Alfano.
Thanks, folks.
And you can find her, what's your website, thedinnerparty.tv?
No, so you can find me. That's okay. ElizabethAlfano.com. I thought I'd make it easy for everybody. ElizabethAlfano.com. It's ELYS. ABETHALFANO. Awesome Vegans, ElizabethAlfano.com.
Very good.
We are going to take a break, and then someone has texted in a question that I would like to hear the answer to.
Sure thing.
All right. It's Bill, it's Wendy, it's Elizabeth Alfano at 720 WGN. There we go. All right, we are chatting with Elizabeth Alfano. You can find her podcast, Awesome Vegans, with Elizabeth Alfano at WGN Plus and wherever your favorite podcasts are found. Got to tell you, special thanks to who provided the Beyond
Veggie
Burger.
Veggie Grill. Oh, how I love them. They are the largest plant-based fast food chain. I'll call them premier fast food chain around the country. They have 33 locations, three right here in Chicago, River North, downtown. It's awesome. They're
we
wonderful.
Always say, I wish there was some kind of healthy alternative, because there's something to be said about fast food.
Yes, right. And it's getting on the healthier side. But here are just some of the things you can get at Veggie Grill, just to tell you, like, oh gosh, so delicious. Barbecue pulled pork sandwich.
Wait, that's not pork?
That's not pork. I know. It's the world's changing, people. Get with the program.
What are they doing to make it seem like pork? What
well,
exactly?
You know, meat, a lot of what's really making meat taste like meat is the spices.
Yeah.
I mean, I say this because I, too, am a cook at home. And so, you know, if you're pulling out cumin and paprika and these things, you're just using the spices. In fact, on my podcast, Awesome Vegans, I interviewed Ethan Brown, the CEO of Beyond Meat, and he took me through the Beyond Meat factory. And so they're using beet juice to make it look red. They're simulating the smells of meat with vegetables, and they're extracting the proteins from plants and just kind of reformulating the shape of these proteins to make the veggie burger. So
we have the question of the century that 815 has texted in. I have wondered for the longest time why people who swear off meat still desire to eat meat-flavored products.
Great question, right?
I love this question.
What's your answer?
Hey, 815. They don't.
Oh, they don't?
This product is not for vegans. I mean, vegans love it because it's like, oh, hey, great. You know, my friends who are meat eaters can have options now. But these products are for meat eaters. These products are
for meat eaters, Bill.
Looking to get rid of the cholesterol, add in some fiber, help out the environment, make their doctor happy, all these great things, and not lose out on taste.
The cost is a little bit more, but not significantly
it's not that
more.
Much more.
Right. And so, right? Again, in my podcast with Ethan Brown, he's like, oh, it's a question of scale. So it's a question of time. The more we make, the more the price comes down. And, you know, Ethan at Beyond Meat, he's not the only one who gets this, right? Tyson is getting into plant-based burgers. Nestle's getting into plant-based burgers. JBS, the largest meat producer in the world, Brazilian company, they're doing a plant-based burger. Maple Leaf, as we discussed, Maple Leaf Foods owns Light Life and Field Roast.
Yeah.
They were a plant company. They now call themselves a protein company. So, you know, things are shifting. I'll tell you a funny little tidbit. I was bouncing around on the internet, and the website Global Meat News, so it's all about meat information for meat businesses to share with other meat businesses. They're having a plant-based meat conference in Amsterdam because so many of the meat producers want to know how to get in on plant-based protein. And God love America,
they're
right?
Smart.
It's capitalism.
They don't want to lose
it's
their,
business.
Their
yes.
Eggs, their market edge.
There have been other plant-based burgers that are very high in sodium. What's the sodium content in a Beyond Burger?
Thank you for asking. I can let you look that up.
That's a great question. And
yes,
a lot of people have, you know, they can't have sodium. A lot of people can't have soy. No soy in a Beyond Burger, but plenty of it in others.
That's right. That's right. Impossible Foods does have soy. So, and it's not genetically modified, the Beyond Burger. So that's also wonderful. But it you're not cooking at home, right? You are buying a packaged product, and that's going to have some sodium. So to answer your question, 380 milligrams of sodium. So 16%
is that
comes
a little,
from,
is that a little higher?
I have no idea.
I'm going to say, well, 16% of the daily recommended value.
Yeah.
So it kind of depends on what you do with the rest of your day.
Right.
You know, if you eat seven of these in one day, then you're done. People, stop that. But, you know, if you have one for dinner, whatever. I mean,
right.
I know an opera singer who's vegan, and he has one burger before he goes on every time he performs because it's so filling and he needs the energy. But meat, like, slows him down, you know?
Sure.
And you don't get that with something like Beyond Meat. So,
and how many, in one burger, how many, is it milligrams of sodium?
380.
All right, and
16%
ballpark, the average fast food single patty plain hamburger, 378 milligrams of sodium.
Right.
So same
thing.
Yeah.
And they're going to have, give or take, the same amount of saturated fat. What they're not going to have is cholesterol, so there's zero cholesterol here. And here you've got fiber, you've got some 13% of the daily recommended value of fiber.
A lot of people saying Orion's going to be mad. Listen, I don't think anybody is going to... I am not going to give up going to have a big steak. And there are people who love meat are not going to change it. I like what you said off the air, you know, to help feed other people. Explain this, because this really made sense to me.
Yes, okay. So there's
but I'm still not giving up my steak.
And you don't have to. That's the great thing. I think when people hear the word vegan, I sort of want to say, like, hey, this is not your grandmother's vegan. Things have changed. The growing market is flexitarians. The growing market is Bill and Wendy.
Yeah.
So you guys really are the future. People are just trying to work in more vegetables, balance out what they're doing so their doctor's not so mad at them, and, you know, be easier on the planet. Obviously be easier on animals, but also be easier on your own system. So, you know, we have a couple crises going on right now. We've got an environmental situation and we've got a population situation. We're now 7.7 billion people and we're going to 10 billion. So how do you feed that many people? This is why companies like Cargill are switching to plant-based. How do you feed that many people when, you know, these are resource intensive things to make meat? It's water intensive. You have to cut down land to grow more grain, and then you don't feed the grain to people. You're feeding it to animals and you're getting less back. So why not just take those grains and feed them right to people? So it really helps to feed a growing population to have more plant-based products.
Orion's still going to key your car. It doesn't matter.
But Orion, and I'm glad you're listening, because there are room for both of us, and that I'm trying to play both sides of it, because that's truly how I feel. I want to go out and have a pork chop. I want to go have a steak. But this is actually really good, and why can't they both exist in harmony and not hurt the other?
And plus, aren't we all about capitalism? Don't we want choices? I mean, just...
Wait, Orion was going to address that. Throw those headphones on.
Sure.
Go ahead,
No, I just wanted to say they should call it a laboratory burger, not a beef burger. It should be a lab burger, because that's what it is.
Okay.
So my response to that would be, so first of all, God love America and for being out ahead and having innovation. You know, as we have our changing dynamic of population, I'm so glad that America's out in front, being the innovator, bringing new products to the market. And you can see, you know, plant-based meat alternatives are up 23% just in 2018 over 2017. So you can see that it's something that people want. And also, you know, meat in and of itself, it's also got its own processed things. You know, you're getting lots of hormones and lots of things are added to that.
No,
so
no. Well, not now you guys with the rules on hormones, no.
And you there are you guys will go at it for the whole day, so that's why I'm trying to say there's room for both. Now, Orion, for someone who is against eating meat for ethical reasons because they love animals, this is a perfect alternative for them.
It is, but I'm always interested in the statement that it's better for the environment, and I'm wondering what kind of proof they have for that.
Ah, yes. The UN report on climate change. It's a god-awful document because it's like 1,000 pages long. But if you go to section 2, it does say in no uncertain terms that we need to be eating less meat so that we can be farming less meat so that it's better for the environment. It is one of the 5 recommendations that they give, along with changing our building codes and standards and things. So I rely on the UN report on climate change for that.
I don't buy it, but that's okay. You enjoy it.
All right. Well, it's pretty good, Orion. I would really love to feed you a little Beyond Burger next time you're here.
No, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for holding back so much, because your mic was open the whole time, and I'm surprised we didn't hear from you earlier. Thank you very much.
I don't know. Hard to say no to the UN report on climate change. It's not one country. It's 56 different countries coming together. But, you know, to each his own. So there's the great thing, right?
Yes.
There is room. This is why it's capitalism. And we have a market that can handle this. There is room. And you're just going to see more and more of this stuff. It is the future, folks. So.
I want to do both. Bill, don't you? I mean, are you going to give up eating meat now because of these?
Probably not. But I would do both.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to. And we didn't mention this, but the brats are pretty darn good, too.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Beyond Meat sausage. Please, people. And I'm Italian, so.
Oh, did Terry grill those last night,
too?
She did. I thought you grilled.
I like the way she rolls.
I was working.
I love it.
Elizabeth, thank you for coming up. If people want to know more, where do they go?
Hey, everybody, go to ElizabethAlfano.com. That's ElysABETH. And, of course, my Awesome Vegans podcast is right here on WGN Radio or iTunes or whatever you, Spotify, whatever you listen to. Quick shout out before I go. Thank you to Veggie Grill, of course, and Beyond Meat. But I do want to say Eddie Firth with the historical roast on Netflix. He's a friend of mine. So we were on the same podcast, Movies Made Me.
Yeah.
And congratulations to him, because he's going to launch on Monday. Yeah.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Coming up, the stories that matter with Eric Rung from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.